Save big on everything for your next project. Now at Menards. Breathe easier with Best Air Allergen Air Filters. They trap larger airborne contaminants to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Best Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our entire selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com today.
Big hits, big laughs, no fail. My fortune is chaos here. Nick and Ronnie, make it liquor, yeah.
How's it? Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for the first episode of season 6. I am possibly happy to be welcoming back my co-host. Ronald, how's it going that side?
No, it's going well. I know you're happy. You're happy to finally get to chirp me on some sort of platform about my Super Brew picks for the past weekend. We'll get to that, I'm sure.
You are correct about that, Ronnie. We'll be getting into that. We'll be covering a bit of the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup action from the weekend. We'll be delving into Razor's firing and its implications on the Springbok coaching setup. We'll be taking a look at a bit of the Super Brew, looking forward to the URC. But just for those listeners that are regulars and are tuning back in for the season, we are going to try and change it up for this episode. We're trying a bit of a different recording style and way of covering the sport. Those that have been listening for a long time, we'd really appreciate some feedback from you guys. Do you like the new style? Would you prefer us to go back to the old way and the sort of theme that we followed throughout there? So please reach out, give us some feedback, whether it's an email, on Spotify, on our website. I mean, yeah, for those that reach out, we'll happily send you some May Forkchaw merch to say thank you for helping us out. So Ronnie,
do you send people anything?
I do. I was actually with the Laser and Gravy yesterday making some lacquer bottle openers.
Okay. Yeah, you should be a little bit more creative with those things. Make some cooler ones.
Yeah, well, if I had a friend called Ronnie that gave me a bit of better input, I might do something more creative.
Fair enough. Okay, well, sorry to those of you that are now going to be the guinea pigs. And maybe if you made that, don't even notice that there's a difference in the style of this episode. But there are a couple of regulars that we do need to thank, first of all. So we'll thank Yuster, Fernando Lingert, Ian Weir, Amanda Geringer, Andre Meads, Kyle Preston, Leroy Daisel.
Leroy. I had to leave your name at the end there because Ronnie really likes to end on a bang. He always says it with some extra oomph. But Ronnie, it's been a while. We've had Christmas in Europe, Christmas in South Africa. It's still winter that side. It's still very much summer this side.
Rain. You understand geography.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, climate change to go with it. But I have seen that you are freezing your ass off there in Germany. It looks very cold. So I have to ask, are you still cycling in all of this?
Do you wish you had seen me when it was snowing and there was lots of ice and I was cycling and I came off my bicycle a couple of times? So that was very interesting. But yes, I've got thick gloves for cycling as well. I have this little beanie type thing made for cyclists that goes under my bicycle helmet, which makes me look like Buzz Lightyear, you know.
I need to get a photo of that.
Yeah, I know. Even my friends are so they try and snap it up all the time. I have a bicycle helmet purely based on the fact that one of the times when I slipped with my bicycle on the ice, I decided it was time for a bicycle helmet. It's scary.
Am I correct, though? Because when we were at university together in Pretoria, I'm pretty sure you rode a bicycle there, too. And I'm sure there was an incident where you came off your bike that side. Am I right, Ronnie?
There's a couple of incidents, yeah. So I may have struck someone that stepped out in front of a parked bus. Who steps out into the road from behind a bus when cyclists are coming down it? That's just ridiculous. And
So
there's
what
another
you're
time
saying
where
is you hit a pedestrian with your bicycle.
yeah. Yes, also there's a car that reversed back when I came and slammed into the back of that car. Yeah, what else? A couple of times I've been involved in some incidents.
Your credentials are a little shaky here on your cycling skills, Ronnie. You won't be doing the Tour de France anytime soon, that's for damn sure.
No, of course I won't.
Well, Ronnie, let's get into it then. A lot of rugby's been on. We're not going to catch up on too much of it. We're just going to dive back into sort of what is the middle of the season now that we're part of the Northern Hemisphere. I just want to start off by talking about the ugly stepchild of South African rugby, Ronnie. It's the Cheetahs. Bloemfontein, Frans Steyn, one of the greatest Springboks ever, is their head coach, their director, the CEO. He is everything to that team. And they just seem to always be on the wrong side of structural changes at the heart of SA Rugby. We've seen them first relegated from Super Rugby, put into the URC back then. Then when we got kicked out of Super Rugby, we pulled them from the URC to put the four teams in. And now they have no idea what competition they're going to be playing in anymore, Ronnie. It's really a horrible scene for the Cheetahs side. Do you think there's a way to fix this and include them, especially if the Welsh teams are going to be bowing out of the competition as they reduce next year?
No, that's the rumor, right? So some people are saying that all four unions are still going to be around in a year's time. So for the Welsh, Ek weet nie, chum, I feel very sorry for the Cheetahs. Like you say, I enjoy Frans Steyn and everything that he's about and what they're trying to do over there in the Free State. But it's a business, and in some respects, it's a struggling business. There are lots of teams that have that fall out. I mean, if we talk about the Sunwolves at some point got ditched, we talk about the Western Force, the Rebels, the Cheetahs, the Southern Kings, you're right. A lot of teams that are struggling, the whole of Argentina. The whole of Argentina and the Jaguars too. So it's a business, and unfortunately money matters, and it's a struggling business on some days. And this is the reality of it. I'm just glad that they're still around. I just hope that South African rugby would find a way to better use them strategically. If that becomes a sort of, we send all of our youngsters there, our promising youngsters over to the Cheetahs. It's taken over by SARU, and that's where we develop young players. That would be a brilliant thing for me in my mind.
It's just very hectic. So for those not in South Africa or not too familiar with it here, the Cheetahs are based in Bloemfontein. And what else is based in Bloemfontein? Greyblum. And they produce an enormous amount of Springbok. So to not have a proper provincial side plying their trade in that province feels to me like missing a trick for, really garnering the talent that has been dished up there for year on year on year. I mean, Ronnie, we've had some epic times down in Bloemfontein. Getting to see the Currie Cup final down that side was epic. The stadium, yes, it's dated, downgraded by SARU, which also makes it difficult now to get test matches there, to get money in for the union. And it just feels like it's a slippery slope that they're on, and we may not see the Cheetahs in the near future.
Yeah, and this is my point. There's not really a competition that can take them now when they play in the European Championship or whatever they end up playing out of Amsterdam. I mean, these guys are training in Bloemfontein. I know it gets cold in Bloemfontein, but very rarely does a game get called off because of snow, like what happened with them against Ulster. So yeah, it's unfortunate that the Cheetahs have to, bend over backwards multiple times just to kind of scrape by and get some game time and play in the Toyota Challenge against the teams like Western Force and the Black Lions and teams like that. So I feel very sorry for them. But there should definitely be room for some sort of strategic way of using their players. Even if perhaps, we've got the Currie Cup, and as soon as we play in the URC, maybe some of those players should get sent out to one of the other big four unions. And with that said, honestly, the Sharks need to be very nervous, because I'm pretty sure that the Cheetahs, given one season with the full backing of that our top four teams are getting, I reckon they could perform a little bit better than the Sharks are.
Yes, that's a serious dig at the Sharks there, Ronnie. But You know what? You might be right. It's really, really, I mean, let's just look. Last night they played against Racing Metro. They only lost by 2 points, and that's one of the French giants that they took on in France. But I mean, very disappointing the week before to see their game against Ulster cancelled due to the weather. The rules of the competition make it a 28-0 win for Ulster, even though the fixture didn't take place. And with that, now they've essentially out of the Challenge Cup, and they have no idea if they'll get an invite to play in it again next year. So how do you sign talent? How do you focus a squad on anything when you've literally got no security? It's really a disappointing situation down there in the Free State. And yeah, I don't see it getting fixed anytime soon.
Yeah, and a couple of players end up going there to, you know, that's where they, it sounds so insane, but that's where they go to die. Their careers go to die. I mean, there was a time Opa Mohodre was playing for the Springboks. What happened to him? You know, it's because the Cheetahs bowed out and he stayed loyal to them. And yeah, it makes you wonder if he could have been a little bit more successful had he moved over to another union. Yeah.
Think of some of the legends that have come out of there. Juan Smith, Ostu Rand, Naka Drotsky, Kabamba Fleurs, Frans Steyn, Ruan Pienaar. I mean, the list is just endless from there. But Ronnie, enough on the sad stuff. Let's just jump back in and check on where the South African teams are at the moment. So they were plying their trade, well, three of them in the Champions Cup, one in the Challenge Cup. But let's first start with the Bulls. They were on a 7-match losing streak, but they've managed to end that now. They got a victory at the weekend. Is that enough to restart or rescue their season, Ronnie, after quite a dismal performance? I mean, they're 11th in the URC. They have just snuck their way into the round of 16 in the Champions Cup, you know, hanging on by a thread, but can they do something with that?
Yeah, Ak Vietnie, it's like you say, in these knockout games, really, that's all that matters, as long as they make it in there and then they can pick themselves up and win just the next game, and then the final. So, well done to them for sneaking in there somehow, but I think it's more a case of other teams having done a lot worse than they have, and that opened up the door for the Bulls to come. I'm surprised by the fact that they lost so many games in a row across the various competitions. It's not something that, you know, we want as the most successful South African side of all time. You know, we don't want to see that sort of stuff. You know, that's it's worrying for South African rugby. But then again, there's also this element of why do our players and our Springbok players do so poorly at franchise level, would they go to play so brilliantly as Springboks? I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that you raised there. And I do get a sense that for Rassie Erasmus, it doesn't matter how you perform at club level. It's what you can do for him on the training pitch and on the field. And I do think that that has probably had a bit of an influence on performance at the URC level for these players. But you've also got to factor in things like the amount of game time they're having, no real off-season. You know, all these guys playing now have just finished a full URC season, a full test season, and now they're back into the URC and Champions Cup. So it does make it difficult. They're down, they're not out. But I don't think this performance this weekend, whilst it was a win, was convincing enough to suggest to us that, you know, this is the point at which they turn their season around. So we'll have to see there. But Ronnie, do you think the Bulls fell into the Sharks recruitment trap? You know, they've also now signed a numerous number of Springboks. They've just brought in Andre Pollard. You know, we saw the excitement with Kirkley Arendser returning this weekend. But it seems that the teams with the most Springboks don't seem to perform the best. The ones that have, you know, a few sprinkled in their squad do well. But look at the Bulls this weekend. They had all those Springboks playing there, but their two standout players were Jandre Rudolph, who's actually come as an old man from the Cheetahs and having a hell of a year for the Bulls, and Nizam Carr. That proves the point. It's not always the Springboks in the squad, but it's the guys willing to die for the jersey.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know if they just are more lackadaisical, if they are more relaxed, they take a bit of a back seat. They're not training as hard. They're not as focused because the season's long, right? So maybe they're suffering from a bit of burnout. But no, I think Rassie rotates the players really well. Rassie counts training minutes as part of the number of minutes that they work for him in a season. So I don't understand it. You're absolutely right. It baffles me completely why these world-class players, from a Springbok point of view, go and are really, in my opinion, not firing on all cylinders for the franchise teams. I struggle to understand it. You know, The only thing that I can say is it has to come down to the coaching. But at some point, when you look at the Sharks, they start cycling out different coaches. It's not coaching. It's something else.
And it's also crazy because a lot of the time, the errors are their soft skills. Their passing, catching, kicking, tackling. You know, these are things that are making them Springboks in the first place. The fundamentals of the game, and they just seem to be letting slip. So yeah, I think the moral of the story is having all the Springboks in your squad is not the blessing you think it is. You get excited when these signings are unveiled, but the more they come, the more you seem to struggle in the domestic competitions.
But then talking of a team that has less Springboks, we talk about the Lions. They're also not performing too well, but it's almost like their performance is to be expected exactly as it is right now. You know, they struggle, but on some days they play some really attractive rugby and they do so well that you can only be proud of them.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the Lions there, Ronnie. Why don't we then talk a little bit about them? So, I mean, this weekend they held the lead for much of the game. They needed a win to go through to the last 16. Perpignan only needed a draw to make it through. And to me, it was quite phenomenal, or phenomenal is not the right word, but shocking probably, that Mornay Steyn is in their coaching team, a kicking coach there, and it didn't seem like they had any shape or plan to take a drop goal in those dying minutes. They had all the territory, they had the position, and not once did you see them lining up in a position to take a drop goal and simply win the contest.
Yeah, it's a sort of decision-making in the crucial moments that's lacking there. So that just comes, you know, they don't have the experience of the right player that has proven to be able to make those decisions. And that happens. Yeah, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one.
But they had Chris Smith at 10. He's plied his trade for the Bulls. He's done very well.
He went overseas.
Exactly. And then, you know, your fly half can take the drop goal, but you also need the shape and the patterns to get them into a position where they've got enough time to slot it over. And I was really quite shocked to see that the Lions weren't able to do that. They were much rather pushing for a try. Yes, great. But you actually simply needed a win to go through here.
Yeah, but that's what everyone trains. Very rarely does a coach say, right now we're going to do an afternoon of lining up for the drop goal. No one practices that. The only people that go for drop goals are seasoned fly halves that, you know, can do these things with their eyes closed and don't need to practice it. You know, they do a couple of kicks here and there between practices. And yeah, I don't believe that a team ever works together to go into formation for the drop goal. They train and train and train tries.
Wait for Chasing the Sun 3 when we've won 2027 with a drop goal. And Rossi's like, yep, we started this in 2018, practicing this shape. So you never know. But all in all, I do believe it's a bit of a blessing for the Lions that they're out of the Challenge Cup. I think it's a split focus on a competition they weren't really excelling in anyway. They are seventh in the URC, Ronnie. So they're in playoff position at the moment in the URC. If they refocus on that competition and start to click a little bit better, a few home games coming up as well, including one against the Bulls at Ellis Park, I really could see them securing a home playoff if they can string together a long season, or at worst, at least a playoff berth.
Yeah, I think they should be grateful with the playoff berth. A home one would be incredible. We could maybe get a whole 400 people into the Ellis Park Stadium for that. Yeah, that would be nice. I do agree.
Yeah, I think there was enough people at Ellis Park this past weekend to have one person in each stand. It's honestly shocking. Ronnie, what about the Sharks? So, you know, they've just proved when they've got their killer instinct clicking in, they really look unstoppable. That Springbok quality comes to the fore. They really managed to put Clermont away this weekend. But to me, it actually looks different how the players are playing at the moment. They look a bit more intense. They look a bit more interested in the game. And it looks to me like they're starting to play for JP Peterson. He's got one loss, three wins. Not so bad for a very young coach.
I don't really have an opinion on this one. The Sharks have disappointed me for over a number of years. Man, I love that side. Honestly, they were a fantastic side to support. But really, when it really matters, How can they do that? How can they capitulate and collapse the way that they do? I do not understand it. You say that you're seeing them pick up their heads and play a little bit more for JP Peterson. I say it's early days and it's purely coincidental. Any sort of good performance at the moment.
Yeah, well, Siya Kolisi is on his way out of the Sharks team. He's going over to the Stormers. Thomas the Tank coming back to the Sharks. Stephen Louvies has actually just arrived back at the Sharks as well. One test Springbok. But yeah, it would be great to see them, you know, start to finish strong. And that brings me to my question to you, Ronnie. Sharks are currently 14th in the URC out of 16 teams. They've got 2 wins from 8 games. It's a pretty dismal record for this season. The season looks pretty much over. You're JP Peterson now. You're in the coaching box there. How do you face the remaining games? Are you looking to salvage the season and finish with some dignity? Or, you know, working towards the new season and trying to string together what you want to do?
No, to do both of those at the same time would just be to sort of win your remaining fixtures, right? To do everything that you need to do to not end, like you say, 12th, to finish, I don't know, 9th or 8th maybe. Would be fantastic, but yeah, I don't know. It's we're really competing with the bottom of the barrel there, and it's just very disappointing for such a quality side with quality players, quality coaches, quality everything except performances.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true, Ronnie. Over to the Stormers then. That's a team that clearly plays for one another. Somehow they always seem to manage a way to win when the cards are stacked against them, except against Harlequins. That was a bit of a blips on the radar. But they do remain undefeated in the URC. You know, it's a good, and that's exactly what we were talking about earlier with the Bulls and Sharks recruitment. There, they've got a good mix of big names and then local stars, guys that were born in Cape Town, played their local rugby in Cape Town, and are now playing for the Stormers and playing for that crowd.
You know, I've never been a fan of the Stormers. Grinds my gears that they're doing so well. But as a South African, fantastic to see. You know, at least you can be very proud as a Stormers or Province supporter. They're a team that, like you say, plays really well. John Dobson does an excellent job there motivating and managing his players. And yeah, Sasha performing fantastically there. Just hope that he keeps his head on his shoulders, doesn't get too full of himself, because he's put some great performances together, not only in the Springboks jerseys, but now in the Stormers also.
So you mentioned Sasha there. This weekend was his debut as captain of the Stormers, first one out. You know, Dobbo says they're looking to the future. It's a long-term plan for Sasha that he will captain the side full-time eventually. But for me, it still seems a little bit premature, Ronnie. Do you think he's ready? He did get a yellow card this weekend. His discipline for me is still a little bit of an issue. He gets involved in the niggly stuff that a captain shouldn't. I just feel like it's a little bit too early on the Sasha front.
Yeah, of course, I 100% agree. It's way too premature. Don't go and mess around now with that. If we look about, you know, he's often been compared to Dan Carter, which I think is sometimes a bit of a mistake. But Dan Carter didn't, you know, he wasn't the captain. He did his job quietly, unassumingly, and put some brilliant performances on the field. Because he didn't have to think about those other things. You know, we talk about sometimes when Evan Etzebeth gets made to be captain. He doesn't play as well when he's a captain. And certain players, you shouldn't make the captain, and especially not too soon. He needs to be slowly introduced to that. So I would say this is a long road for Sasha, the captaincy road. Don't spring it on him too quickly.
Yes, Ronnie. And with that, that's the first time we've agreed in an episode so early in the season. So well done to you, Ronnie.
Don't waste my time.
Well, I'm getting onto a segment now that's really going to grind your gears, because, yes, you had a cuck weekend on Superbrew. What were you drinking there in Germany when you were making your picks? Were your hands too cold from the snow that you made these cuck picks? You honestly would have been better off just taking all the defaults at the weekend. So I have to give you your worst pick of the week. Still picking Clermont to win by 2. I understand where that came from, but that was an annihilation in the opposite direction.
Okay, please continue. Please get all of this out so that from next week and every subsequent week that I whip you in Super Brew, that I can say the exact same things. Come, please get them all out. What else did I do?
It's all right, Ronnie. I know you're lashing out, but it's okay. We're here to help you. So you hitting the slide to the bottom faster than a game of snakes and ladders at this point, Ronnie, because I can proudly say on this show with confidence now, you are 880th in our Super Brew pool for the Investec Champions Cup, and I am lying pretty in 206th, having had a lacquer weekend on Super Brew. So with my shoddy maths, that's a good 600 place difference.
I'm very glad you know where to how to look up the positions on SuperBrew. It's fantastic to know because next week and the week after that, it's going to get very interesting.
Yeah, Ronnie, I see what you're saying, but yeah, the IRC returns, maybe you'll have a little bit of a better luck there. But now for our season six segment that will be in every show, Ronnie, and that's the May Fokchom take. So this week will be mine, next week will be Ronnie's, and we'll go like that, switching it up between. But this one, Ronnie, I'm interested to hear your thoughts because we have the greatest rivalry tour coming to South Africa. Three games on home soil with the fourth one set to take place at a neutral venue. It was looking like it was going to be the Aviva in Dublin, but it now looks increasingly likely that it's going to be played in the US of A. I believe that would be the biggest mistake that SARU could make, scheduling a test in America, for two reasons. One, we potentially face travel ban as South Africans on going to the US, so your support base there would not be as great. Secondly, I think I don't want to delve too much into politics, but the divides that are being drilled at South Africa as a result of current political landscapes does not suit the Springbok brand in any way that champions inclusivity. I think it would be a pretty poor image to have the Springboks playing a test in the USA.
You want me to comment on the rubbish that you just spoke?
Yeah, go for it. I'd love to hear your two cents.
No, I think you're absolutely wrong. I think, firstly, the whole point that we have the greatest rivalry tours because both unions wanted a lot of money and both unions are in need of a lot of money. This isn't SARU a decision, a mistake that SARU makes. This is financial decision that's going to, that is fantastic. If you go to Soldier Field or whatever one of those fields are, those big fields in the USA, and fill it up because you can market it as the greatest versus the other greatest team of all time. It's a lot of money and it's all US dollars and it's coming straight back into our pocket as well as the pockets of the All Blacks. I think you're wrong on all other fronts.
Yeah, well, it didn't take too long for you to disagree with me on something in this show, but I do feel like it wouldn't suit the Springbok brand at all to be going there. There's currently calls for Bafana Bafana to boycott the World Cup and not go to that either. I wouldn't want to see the Springboks being tied up in a political back and forth and being used for, things that they shouldn't be used for. Be that as it may, sticking to the topic of the All Blacks and the Springboks. There is only one story that matters this week, and that is that Razor was fired as All Blacks coach. He had a 74% win rate this year. That's better than any of the Northern Hemisphere sides, bar England, and he was let go. There's mumblings that it was a player revolt. If that's the case, isn't that a little bit too soccer-like, Ronnie?
Yeah, I 100% agree. If this was the players now that Young, we don't actually know what's going on in the back there. He might be a really rubbish person, but I doubt that. At least from my perspective, I don't believe so. At some point, the players do need to be a little bit accountable for what is happening on the field and the results that they're getting. So I don't know. A player revolt sounds a little bit harsh. You throw your toys out the cot and say you're not coming to play for the All Blacks as if that coach is still there. I don't know. That's not very professional. That is, like you say, a little bit soccer-like or a little bit football-like and like it. I feel very sorry for Razor as a person. As a coach, yeah, look, he got held and he's measured against a much higher standard than most sides do, and that's because of the success that the All Blacks have had for a very, very long time. The bar that they set is very high. If you look at Fozzie, similar results, a lot of upsets as well. His players stood behind him. So I don't know if one coach can achieve exactly what the other coach is achieving. I don't see, how you can argue about the methods of one coach versus the other then.
Yeah, look, Jamie Joseph is being spoken of as the front runner here, which caused a lot of fear that Tony might be leaving the Springboks to return with Jamie to coach the All Blacks. This has obviously been waylaid by Rassie Erasmus with a very funny reel at the weekend. I'm not fucking leaving. So Tony will be remaining with the Springboks. We don't yet know who the coach will be of the All Blacks. It is likely to be Jamie. However, from his perspective, it must be quite hectic because you look at your predecessor, he only lost three games. And you're like, okay, but what yardstick am I going to be measured by? You know, is it results driven? Is it, do the players like me or not? How much, you know, influence or sway do they have? What environment am I stepping into? You know, how far am I expected to progress in this rivalry tour, which is right on my doorstep? Certainly a lot to consider. And don't forget that Jamie didn't apply for the role when Razor competed for it either. So I don't think it's as much as of a foregone conclusion as everyone thinks it's going to be. But I am very glad that Tony's decided to stay here, because we've only just gotten the hang of Tony Ball, and it would be a huge loss.
We're not confirmed on that, though, right? In as much as there's rumors that he might be leaving, it's also rumors that he's going to be staying. We simply don't know. We don't know if there's a clause that allows him an early exit. And nothing's confirmed.
Dr. Erasmus has spoken.
Dr. Erasmus.
Just looking ahead to next weekend then, Ronnie, or this weekend coming, Stormers are hosting the Sharks in Cape Town. If the Sharks want to prove they're turning things around, toppling the only undefeated side in the URC is the way to do it. What's your prediction for that one, Ronald?
Yeah, unfortunately, the Stormers are going to win this one, and comfortably so.
Ulster taking on Cardiff in a top-of-the-table clash. They're tied on points, and that could be the defining moment of their season, Ronnie, and decides who gets home advantage in the playoffs. They're both having surprisingly good seasons. Cardiff truly, truly impressing me. Who do you think's taking that one, the Irish or the Welsh?
Look, at this stage, it has to be the Irish, has to be the Ulstermen.
There we go. You heard it here from Ronnie.
And that's where we'll leave it for this week. As always, plenty to agree with.
Plenty to disagree with.
And at least one take that's probably completely forked.
If you enjoyed the episode, do us a favor, share it with a mate.
Or send it to someone who's going to argue with you about it.
Get involved on the socials. Let us know where we're right.
And especially where Nick's wrong.
Remember to join us on Superbrew and support us on Patreon.
We'll be back next week and to do it all again.
Cheers, Chorms.